breaking ball and a call. Strike three. Third strikeout for Zach.
He's going to just watch it go. A grand slam for Bryson Stott.
And there's a high fly ball. Deep right field. Harper watches it fly.
WHYY and Billy Penn, it is hitting season. Hey there, podcast pals. I'm John Stolness from The Good Fight and Billy Penn. You can follow me on Twitter at John Stolness. Coming up, we're going to dip into the hitting season mailbag and take some of your questions and comments about the team that was on a roll up until Tuesday and Wednesday in their series against the Cincinnati Reds. Two disheartening, frustrating, and I would even say maddening losses to a spunky young Reds team, but a team the Phillies are better than and a team they should beat. But these two nights on Tuesday night, Wednesday night, the team just not playing well. Some head-scratching lineups by Rob Thompson and some head-scratching in-game decisions by a manager I normally like very much and agree with much of what he does. But Rob Thompson doing some things these last couple of nights here in Cincinnati that are driving me crazy. We're going to talk about that. We're going to talk about the continued struggles of Nick Castellanos and whether it's time for that guy to ride the bench for just a little bit and maybe even see if we can find a way to get this guy on another team at some point. So lots to get to here on this episode of Hittin' Season. Let's jump right in here with these last two games on Tuesday night and Wednesday night. Obviously, the Phillies losing both of them after starting off the series so promising on Monday night. We talked about that on the latest podcast, episode 806 with Justin and me. And can't say the same now. We're really hoping to keep that ball rolling. You knew the Phillies weren't going to win, 15 games in a row. That wasn't likely to happen. So not terribly surprising on Tuesday night when the team came up short. Things just didn't go their way. They didn't play all that well. And the Cincinnati Reds took advantage of it. The Reds are a decent team. They're not good, I don't think. Maybe they're a potential wild card team. They're certainly, I think, interesting, I guess, is the right word. But after the Phillies smoked them 7-1 on Monday night, the Reds came right back and handed it to them 8-1 on Tuesday. Not a good night for Christopher Sanchez, of course. The defense cost him early in that game, but he also just didn't have it in that one and gave up 3 earned runs, 5 overall in that ball game. And that would really ended a string of pretty phenomenal starting pitching by the Phillies at Christopher Sanchez start. But that was going to happen, right? I mean, you can't get too mad at Sanchez. He'd been pitching really well. Couldn't get too mad at the team necessarily for what we saw in that game. You break a 7-game winning streak. Okay, that happens. The game on Wednesday night, which the Phillies lost 7-4 to the Reds after jumping out to a 1-0 lead and then getting a 3-1 lead in this ball game. It sure seemed in the sixth inning like the Phillies were starting to take control. They'd missed some opportunities to make it a bigger score, but we've got to talk about what Rob Thompson is doing with the lineup here in these last two games. Now, when he came out on Tuesday night against a left-handed pitcher and sat some of his lefty players, you know what? I don't love that. I don't love sitting Brandon Marsh. I don't love sitting Bryson Stott against left-handers seemingly every time the Phillies have one, but you want to give them a day off and you want to do it against a left-hander. I'm okay with that. Once in a while. Okay. You want to get some of these other guys into the lineup. That's fine. But then in Wednesday's game, you had Stott and Marsh out of the lineup again. Now, I'm here to tell you, I think that the Reds starting pitcher, Nick Lodolo, is a good young pitcher. He's definitely got good stuff. And I know that left-handers don't hit him very well. But I don't understand keeping both guys out of the lineup both nights. Like, are we really that hot to get Whit Merrifield and Edmundo Sosa and Christian Pache on the field? Like, is that something we are desperate to have happen? It sure seems like it. Sure seems like Rob Thompson went out of his way to make sure that those guys, those dynamic right-handed bats, went up against Nick Lodolo here on Wednesday night. I would rather take my chances with Brandon Marsh and Bryson Stott in the lineup against a guy like that than Ed Sosa and Christian Pache. And I know those guys have to play some. Like I said, I'm okay with those guys playing on Tuesday night. I would even be okay if you had Stott sit on Tuesday night and had Marsh sit on Wednesday night. Split it up a little bit. So that you're not playing the entire third line in two games in a row. These are essentially, they look like give up lineups. And Bryce Harper isn't with the team right now. He's going to return to the team on Thursday following paternity leave. So these were two games where you already were without your best left-handed hitter and your best hitter overall, probably. You knew you were going to be without Bryce Harper, and yet you decide to sit Brandon Marsh particularly, who has been this team's best hitter so far in the first 3 weeks of the season. I think it's stupid. I think it's just dumb. And this is coming from a guy who has always defended Rob Thompson. I think Rob Thompson's a good manager. I think he's one of the best managers this team has ever had. I think he brings a lot of things to the table in terms of creating a culture and a clubhouse of accountability and camaraderie. It's a great group. The pitching staff seems to really thrive under it. I think that it's good that he's a player's manager. He has his players' backs. But I don't understand what he's doing here with these lineups. Sitting Stott and Marsh a second straight night. And then you sit JT Realmuto here on Wednesday night against a left-hander. That makes absolutely no sense. Now, I know Garrett Stubbs has been catching Spencer Turnbull exclusively here so far in the early going. And I guess that's why that happened. But then, okay, sit him in a different game. Right, sit Realmuto against the right-hander if you want to get Garrett Stubbs in the game. I mean, and have we really gotten to a point with Spencer Turnbull where he can only throw to Garrett Stubbs? Like, Turnbull's not even going to be in the rotation after this game, and he pitched great. I'm going to talk about Spencer Turnbull in just a minute. He pitched great, but this doesn't make any sense to put Garrett Stubbs in a lineup in which you're trying to get every left-handed bat out of there, but you're going to put Garrett Stubbs in there. In this game, you had Nick Castellanos, who came into the game hitting 184 with a 452 OPS as your cleanup hitter. And he came to the plate five times in this game. Many of these plate appearances came with runners on base, and he stranded five runners. He went 0 for 5 in this game. Whit Merrifield did have an RBI single in the same game, so good for him, but he came into the game hitting 143 with a 418 OPS. He hit fifth in the order on Wednesday night. Look, Nick Lodolo is off to a very good start. 2-0 with a 0.75 ERA in two starts, and he pitched well in this one. Five innings, three runs, four strikeouts, three walks, six hits. This is not vintage Tom Glavine, though, gang. He has a 4.03 career ERA in 28 games. Why not sit one of them on Tuesday and the other on Wednesday, talking about Stott and Marsh? Why does the whole bottom half of the lineup have to be full of reserves? Can we not space these out a little bit more? I truly do not understand why Thompson does this. And again, I'm a Thompson defender, but I can't defend this. This just looked like I'm going to throw my hands up game. And he had a brutal game on Wednesday. He has these games every once in a while. Rob Thompson, every once in a while, will have a game where he seems to be late to the party, an inning behind. And I know there are reasons behind what he does, and he usually has an explanation for why he does the things he does or doesn't do the things that he doesn't do. But there were some things in this game that just didn't make any sense at all. With a 3-1 lead, Sir Anthony Dominguez comes in and was all over the place. He was hit around again. Sir Anthony Dominguez, I think it's time for a trip to Lehigh for Sir Anthony Dominguez. Gave up four runs on two walks and two hits. His ERA now 9.72. And I think he just left him in too long. Gave Sir Anthony Dominguez way too much rope and turned a 3-1 lead into a 5-3 deficit by not going out and getting him. Now, listen, Sir Anthony Dominguez has to pitch better than this. He's supposed to be one of your late inning guys. He's supposed to be one of your potential closers. And if you can't trust him in the sixth inning with a 3-1 lead, that's a big problem. They need to get him out of the bullpen, get him down to AAA so he can work on whatever it is he needs to work on. And I don't know, maybe he doesn't have any options left. I haven't even checked to see if Sir Anthony Dominguez has options left. I think he does. If he does, he's got to go down to AAA. He's got to go down to Lehigh Valley. Because this is untenable. And Rob Thompson left him in too long. He should have put in Matt Strom a little bit earlier. I always want to call Matt Strom Matthew Strom. It just sounds right, but I know he goes by Matt. That's just weird. But that was the first thing that Rob Thompson did that didn't make any sense. I know people were talking about pulling Spencer Turnbull a little bit too early. Maybe you could have pushed him a little bit more. Turnbull was amazing in this game. 5 innings, 1 run, 3 hits, 8 strikeouts in 5 innings with just 3 walks. His ERA now a National League best 1.33. He had thrown 89 pitches through 5 innings. You might have been able to get another inning out of him. But again, they're concerned about his workload. They're concerned about how many innings he's going to put on that arm, how many pitches he puts on that arm. I don't think they want him to go over 100 pitches, especially as he's getting ready to transition to the bullpen with Taijuan Walker getting ready to rejoin the starting rotation. I don't think Spencer Turnbull is going to be out of the starting rotation for too long, gang. I don't foresee this working out. But anyway, you could argue they could have kept him in for another inning. I was more okay with them taking with Rob Thompson taking Spencer Turnbull out after 5 innings. Here were my 2 big problems, and this had to do with the lineup. With the Phillies down 5-4, and they had runners on 2nd and 3rd with 1 out, and this was in the 7th inning. They allowed Sosa to bat against a right-handed reliever instead of pinch hitting Bryson Stott. Again, you're down 5-4. You're down by a run. You're getting back into this game. You've got 2nd and 3rd with 1 out here in the 7th inning. Okay, you're running out of outs, and you've got the right-handed reliever coming in. Why on earth are you not pinch hitting Bryson Stott there? That's just basic. And then Sosa struck out, failed to get the runner in from 3rd with 1 out to tie the game. He then makes an error later in the game. Terrible decision by Rob Thompson. I was screaming at the TV, put in Bryson Stott. Put him in. What are you watching? What are you thinking about here, Rob? I don't get it. It made no sense baseball-wise. None, zero, especially since Stott hadn't played the game before. It's not like he needed rest. You rested him the night before. Made no sense. No sense whatsoever. And then an inning earlier, this was less egregious, but still not a good decision. He left Christian Pache in to hit against a right-handed reliever. The Reds pulled Lodolo. They bring in Christian Pache. Christian Pache is coming up next. They bring in a right-handed reliever to go after him with runners on 1st and 3rd in the 6th inning, leading 2-1 and nobody out. And Pache strikes out. There's a chance to bring in Brandon Marsh in that spot. Now, they brought in Brandon Marsh an inning later, or 2 innings later, and Brandon Marsh flied out with runners on base, ending a threat, unfortunately. But you bring in Brandon Marsh in that spot, I feel like he can hit you a fly ball there, and Christian Pache strikes out. Luckily, Johan Rojas picked him up with an RBI single that made it a 3-1 game there in the 6th inning. But I just, again, it doesn't make any sense to me why you don't pinch hit Brandon Marsh there for Christian Pache and get Brandon Marsh in at bat against a right-handed reliever. Doesn't make any sense to me. There's no explanation you can give me that makes any sense for why Rob Thompson did that. So I think a couple of brain dead moves by Rob Thompson. This was not a good Rob Thompson game. And again, I like Rob Thompson. I think he's a good manager. I think a lot of you folks on my timeline who believe he's a detriment to the team, that he's holding them back, I don't agree. I don't agree that Rob Thompson is a bad manager. I think he's had 2 bad nights with these lineups. I think they are overplaying the lefty-righty thing. It's just too much. These are some of the things that Gabe Kapler used to do that used to drive us crazy. Sure, the spreadsheet says Lodolo is murder on lefties. But when your right-handed alternatives are Edmundo Sosa and Christian Pache, look, okay, one of those 2 nights for those guys to get in the game. Totally get it. But also, if you want Brandon Marsh to be an everyday player for you, he's got to get some at-bats against left-handers. And Bryson Stott hits better against lefties than he does against righties historically. Stott is very good against left-handed pitching. He stays in the box. He keeps that front shoulder out. Or keeps that front shoulder in better against lefties than just about anybody else on the team. So that you're subtracting when you take those guys out, even against a left-handed pitcher. I mean, you want to give a guy rest for a day, a left-handed hitter against a left-handed pitcher. One day, I get it. It's fine. But both days, that was just an over-reliance on the analytics that tell you righty-lefty matchups against these guys. I just disagree wholeheartedly with whoever's decision that was, whether it was Sam Fold, whether it was Rob Thompson, whoever it was, whoever made those decisions needs to rethink it. Unless it's purely for just for rest, it was dumb to keep both of those guys out. And then Rob Thompson, again, missed opportunities there in the game, getting Stott and Marsh in for Sosa and Pache. They should have gotten in those games earlier than they did. And of course, the game on Tuesday night, you know, the Phillies got down 5-1. Again, Christopher Sanchez wasn't pitching all that well. The defense was bad. They did have a chance in the fifth inning, down 5-1, loaded the bases with no outs after Christian Pache, Edmundo Sosa, and Johan Rojas all walked to start the inning. Bases loaded, nobody out. And then you had Kyle Schwarber and Trey Turner look vintage Game 6, Game 7 National League Championship Series. They were over-anxious in those two at-bats. Kyle Schwarber expanding the zone, something he hasn't done this year, struck out. And then Trey Turner struck out. JT Realmuto lined out to center. That was your ball game right there. The Reds just kept tacking on after that and went on to win that game. So two losses in a row here following the seven-game winning streak. Very frustrating as the Phillies fall to 15-10, now five games over 500 after getting to a season-high seven games over 500. Before I get to the mailbag, I also want to talk a little bit here about Nick Castellanos. I mentioned that he had an 0-for-5 day at the plate on Wednesday, stranded five runners. He's hitting 174 on the season. He has a 232 on-base percentage and has a slugging percentage of 196. It's time to have a real conversation about Nick Castellanos, who, if you just look at the numbers, has not been a good baseball player since joining the Philadelphia Phillies. I know he says funny stuff. He's quirky. He's interesting. I've never met the man. I'm sure I would annoy him if we ever met because I annoy lots of people. I've never played the game. And here I am. I'm going to go on and I'm going to bash his performance, having never played the game before. But I'm just getting to the point where I'm done with all of this nonsense. He signed a five-year, $100 million deal with the Phillies before the 2022 season. He posted a season where he was worth negative 0.4 Fangraphs wins above replacement in his first season. Last year, he rebounded with 1.2 wins above replacement. 1.2. He was worth 1.2 more wins against above a replacement player that you would call up from the minor leagues. And this was supposed to be like a really good Nick Castellanos season. This year, he has been worth negative 1.0 wins above replacement coming into the game here on Wednesday night. That number certainly got worse. I'm just, since joining the Phillies, he has been a negative wins above replacement player of 0.2. Negative 0.2 wins above replacement since coming to Philadelphia. There's never any improvement. When he gets hot, and it's great. But he is cold more often than he is hot so far since coming to the Philadelphia Phillies. He's in his third season and it's the same crap. You're being paid $20 million a year to be a linchpin in the middle of the lineup, a right-handed power bat, the guy that you were with the Reds and the Tigers. He was a good hitter during that time before coming to Philadelphia. He had streakiness like every player has streakiness. And no one is sitting here saying that players don't go through bad streaks, don't go through cold streaks. They do. Trey Turner went through it for 4 months last year. It was an entire season of a cold streak for Nick Castellanos in 2022. And he had stretches in 2023 last year where it was really awful. Last June, he was hot. Red hot, five home runs, a 351 average, 387 on base, 567 slugging percentage. And then in July, he hit 162, 194, 303. There are ups and downs. There are ebbs and flows, but I'm so tired of the Jekyll and Hyde nature of Nick Castellanos. You know, he said he was talking to Scott Lauber for a story. I believe it was Scott Lauber. Maybe it was it was Alex Coffey who wrote the story. And he talked to a few of the Phillies beat reporters. I think Matt Gelb had something about this too. He said, "I know last year I was pretty much worthless in the month of July, you know, and I've gone through stretches where I'm out of whack, and all of a sudden it clicks, and everybody's like, 'Holy bleep! What did you figure out?'" Nothing. It's baseball, the highs and lows. And I'm just saying to myself, man, I can't. You gotta be somewhat more consistent than this. Like when you get out of whack, it can't be a month where you are a wasteland. And Nick Castellanos is an automatic out wasteland right now. And he'll probably pull out of it, and he'll have a month where he gets it together and he becomes really productive. But you just know that other shoe is going to drop. And I know Phillies hitters, other hitters, they have highs and lows. They have slumps. They get hot. They have slumps. They get hot. I get it. I do get it. But you can't tell me that this kind of streakiness isn't to the extreme. And if you just look at the numbers, wins above replacement, other numbers from Nick Castellanos, he has been below average. He's not even been below average. He's been below replacement level. I want to read you some numbers here. In 2015, when he started becoming an everyday player with the Tigers at age 23, had an OPS of 721. Not great, okay? But first year as a major league starter, 23, you give a guy slack for that. 2016 with the Tigers, 827 OPS. 2017, 811 OPS. 2018, 854 OPS. 2019, 863 OPS. 2020, the pandemic year, we don't really have to count it, but he was 784 OPS. He was a league average hitter, 14 home runs in 60 games. 2021, he was an all-star, 939 OPS with the Cincinnati Reds. And then in 2022 with the Phillies, 694. Last year, 788. This year, 452 OPS. Now, it's not going to stay that low for forever. Again, I know Nick Castellanos will get hot. He has one extra base hit this year. He had that triple last week. He has 7 RBIs on the season in 24 games. 5 runs scored. You just got to hit better, man. You're supposed to be one of the top mashers in the lineup. The Phillies need him to be a right-handed power hitter who can get hits with runners on base. But all you have to... He's in the hole every at-bat, it seems. Now, he's walking slightly more this year. I want to be clear. One of the things they wanted him to do was chase less, walk a little bit more. He's doing that. He's striking out less, 22% of the time, walking more, 7.5% of the time. But it's not working. What he's been doing isn't working. I don't know what the solution here is, gang. I think if they could trade him, they would trade him in a heartbeat. And I think he's at the point now where they've got to sit him. He's got to get out of the lineup. They asked him about that today, and he said, "I don't know if a break would benefit me. I want to play all 162. It's the manager's decision, blah, blah, blah." Just sit him. Sit him. I can't. And you know, if that means I got to see more Whit Merrifield, okay. If it's more Christian Pache, okay. I think this team's going to be searching for a bat at the deadline. I don't think they can continue to play Nick Castellanos like this. I don't see how they can do it. He's got so much money left on this contract, and it's a 5-year deal. We were so excited when he signed that contract. And if they could go back and do it again, I'm sure they wouldn't do it. I'm sure they wouldn't do it. And we've had great moments with Nick Castellanos. The 2022 playoffs with the sliding catches were great. The home runs in the Atlanta series were great. He got off to a good start in the NLCS as well. Liam Castellanos is just adorable as heck. It's great to see him when he comes to the field and he's running around and comes to the ballpark. That's all great. But I am so tired of the Nick Castellanos act. I'm just tired of the whole thing. I'm ready. I'd rather have Tommy Pham on this team for the money that he's making. He's on a minor league deal last week. I'd rather have Tommy Pham in right field than Nick Castellanos at this point. Tommy Pham brings more to the table right now. I really believe that. I don't know. We're just waiting for Godot when it comes to Nick Castellanos figuring it out. I thought we really did think we were done with this. I really did. Because in 2022, we heard the excuses. New city. It was tough being away from his kids, you know, and I gave him all the grace in the world for that. I really did. I thought, you know what? Yes, baseball, there's a human element to it and all that stuff. Now it's just, he doesn't see the ball too much of the time. He's in a slump too much of the time. It really comes down to that. He slumps too often. He is too often in a debilitating slump. There are not enough highs to offset the lows. There's not enough medium. I would just take medium Nick Castellanos. You know, give me a consistent 770 OPS where, you know, or 750 OPS. I mean, you don't have to be over 800 necessarily. Just be steady. Be a little bit more consistent. The perpetual slumpiness of Nick Castellanos. I can't anymore. Sit him. He's got to sit. Get him out of the lineup. I don't care who you play. And they're going to be hunting for another outfielder at the trade deadline. I'm convinced of it. This is just not tenable anymore. I'm done. I'm just done. I've had enough. It's time to figure something else out. I've reached my breaking point. This is what happens when John Stolness gets broken. Okay, I got broke. He broke me. And it stinks that, you know, we have to be so negative here on the heels of a 7-game winning streak. But you just know if the Phillies don't figure out a way to win some games here on this road trip, you just know the voices are going to be out there saying they only got the 7-game winning streak because of who they were playing, the Rockies and the White Sox. And it's going to be hard to argue against that. I don't want to believe that's the case. But they've got to show up here. Bryce Harper should be back for the final game of the series on Thursday, this 4-game series against the Reds, the 1-10 start. Zach Wheeler will be going to the mound for the Phillies, so he'll be looking to follow up his nearly no-hit performance against Nick Martinez. He's a right-hander. The lefties on this team should blast him out of the water. He has a 4.76 ERA on the season, only 14 strikeouts in 17 innings. This is a guy they should absolutely destroy on Thursday. If they don't and they lose 3 out of 4 to the Reds, shame on them for following up that 7-game winning streak by losing the last 3 games of this series, especially to a ham and egger like Nick Martinez in the final game of the series. All right, I promised a mailbag. Let's start ticking through some of these mailbag questions here. We're going to start with one of the big fans of the podcast. He's a true friend of the podcast, a true podcast pal, Paul Pazimino, at Paul Paz on Twitter. He asks, despite the best start in several years, Phillies fans act like the team is not playing as it should. What would make them happy? Anything? Paul, I get the feeling you may not like the first however long I've been recording this this podcast, the first 25 minutes of this podcast, because, again, it's just 2 games. It's just 2 losses. Lots of teams lose 2 in a row. And we do get worked up about it because we are a podcast that does 3 a week. So we react to the individual games. I do feel like, you know, fans do get too up and down. We do ride the ebb and flow a little bit too much. So when you hear me criticizing the team, when you hear me getting upset about the Rob Thompson decisions, it's only because I feel like, you know, some of these things are avoidable. Some of these things are poor process or poor decision-making. Some of them are just I'm projecting longer-term problems, like with Nick Castellanos, or I'm just frustrated at a long-standing problem like Nick Castellanos. When Aaron Nola comes up small in a big spot, it's frustrating. It's frustrating to spend 3 hours or 2.5 hours, I guess now. Major League Baseball games are played in 2.5 hours. It's frustrating watching a team struggle or make errors or do dumb things. Football games are longer and they only come once a week. So you really do understand why fans are so hyper reactive to single games. And we really shouldn't do that with Major League Baseball. But we're online now. You know, we're all online for each and every one of these baseball games to a degree, especially those of us who cover the team and talk about the team multiple times a week. And so, you know, I am generally speaking happy about the Phillies. I'm happy with where the team is. I'm happy with where they are in the standings. I'm content with how they're playing, generally speaking. I love the starting rotation. I figure the bats are going to come around. It's just these kinds of games against lesser teams like the Reds are annoying. And you just kind of, if you're going to be online, you know, it's an everyday thing. And baseball fans, Phillies fans, I do think some of you guys who listen to the podcast, I think you go too far when I see when I see you online. I think the criticisms of Rob Thompson go too far. That doesn't mean he's not open for criticism. Obviously, you heard me criticize him pretty strongly here on this podcast tonight. I don't normally do that with Rob. You've heard me kind of get after Nick Castellanos. I've gotten after Trey Turner when I felt he's underachieved. I think I give certain players more grace because of how often they've come through in the past. So if Bryce Harper is struggling, I give him a little bit more grace because of everything he's done since coming to Philadelphia. All right. Same thing with Zach Wheeler. If he blows up and has a bad start, I give him more grace because generally speaking, he doesn't do that. But I think we need to be careful not to slam guys too hard, too frequently, when the larger body of work doesn't warrant that. All right. I guess that's how I would say what would make them happy. Winning 100 games would make Phillies fans mostly happy. But a lot of it is aesthetics. You know, watching guys strike out with runners on second and third and one out is aesthetically unpleasant. And we react to unpleasant things in the moment. All right. Good question, Paul. Joey at Brosif Biscuit asks, what does a Kyle Schwarber extension look like, and do you think that it is necessary to keep him around after his contract ends next year? That's a great question. I don't know exactly what a Kyle Schwarber extension looks like. I don't know if the Phillies want to extend Kyle Schwarber. I get the feeling that the Phillies would probably be okay with the Kyle Schwarber experience lasting these 4 years and then kind of seeing what happens. Because Kyle Schwarber can't play the field anymore, so he is strictly a designated hitter. And designated hitters, power hitters, some of them don't age well. Some do. Some maintain their power. But if we see a decline in Kyle Schwarber in the latter stages of 2024 or in 2025, I don't think the Phillies want to be beholden to a multi-year extension to Kyle Schwarber. I think they're willing to let the Schwarber contract play itself out and see what happens. I think if he performs well in 2024 and 2025, I think, and he does hit free agency, we've seen the Phillies negotiate free agent contracts with their players. And I don't think you need to sign him to an extension in order to do that. I think Kyle Schwarber loves it in Philadelphia. I don't know that he wants to go anywhere else. And I think they would have a real good shot at re-signing him as a free agent if it got to that point. So, no, I don't. If they did sign him to a contract extension, it would likely just be like a 2-year extension. I don't think you're looking at a 4-year extension or anything like that. But I don't think Kyle Schwarber would go for that. I don't think he'd want to do that. I think he feels like maybe he has one more big contract in him after the 25 season if he continues to be a 35 to 40 homer guy, and he does. Somebody would sign him for that. Somebody would sign him for a 3 or 4 year deal, probably about $80 million. That would be my guess. I don't think the Phillies are looking to do that right now. That's just, I have no inside information on that, but that is just my sense. Deep Freeze at NJ Freeze asks, are the Phillies going to regret trading Logan Ohapi at some point, or is Marsh going to be worth the price? The failures in drafting outfielders, Hazley and Moniak, necessitated this move, in which they may have given up the next Real Muto, a premium position player. Now, I love Ohapi, but I think Logan Ohapi is going to be a solid major league player. With the Angels, he's off to a very good start. He's already worth 0.7 wins above replacement. He has a 329 batting average, 390 on base, 486 slugging, 153 OPS plus for Logan Ohapi so far this season. He's a good player. And we all knew that the 24-year-old was going to be a good player. Here's the thing. Brandon Marsh is a good player when they play him. And that's one of the reasons, another reason why you don't want to make Brandon Marsh into a platoon player, because you did give up a potential, the next Real Muto. Now, the Phillies have a Real Muto of their own, and he's signed to a long-term deal. So you couldn't keep Ohapi anyway. You could argue, did they acquire the right player for Logan Ohapi? And I think we're seeing massive improvement from Brandon Marsh year to year. He has been their best offensive performer this season. Now, why they keep taking him out against left-handers, against all left-handers, I don't know. They got it. I think they should stop doing that and let him play every day. So I like the move still. I think now if he's not going to play center field, it looks like Johan Rojas is that guy. It does weaken the trade value for the Phillies. I think the Angels probably did get more trade value here because you got an everyday starting catcher as opposed to a left fielder that the Phillies don't feel comfortable playing against many left-handers. That is a win trade for the Angels, but I don't think it's a loss. It's probably a losing trade or a lost trade for the Phillies, but I think we've seen Brandon Marsh has been worth it so far in the playoffs and in the regular season, and I think there's a lot still there from Brandon Marsh. So, you know, I don't think they regret trading Logan Ohapi for Marsh. I think that goes too far. I think it's fair to say the Angels won that trade, but there's still time for the Phillies to win that trade if Marsh continues to progress and they let him be an everyday player. Northern Will at Northern Will asks, what's the plan for Pache? His at-bats have been better than his numbers indicate, but he doesn't get many opportunities. If playing plus center field defense while carrying a 700 OPS makes Rojas a valuable player, the same can be said for Pache. I don't disagree with that. I think he's redundant on this team. I would trade Pache if I could and bring in somebody with a different skill set, because he's not going to play center field all that often. Johan Rojas, now that he's kind of gotten his offensive sea legs under him, is not going anywhere. So I think he was the backup plan for Johan Rojas. I don't really think you need it anymore. That being said, I think Pache is still kind of strictly a platoon guy. He should hit mostly against left-handed pitching, but I don't want that to be at the expense of Brandon Marsh. So I would trade him. I think Pache should be traded. I think he'll be better someplace else as a center fielder, and he should get that opportunity. I don't see much of a future for him here in Philadelphia, and I think you want a little more pop from the right side of the plate off the bench rather than Christian Pache. Tim at TSS Smythe says, how do you envision the balance of Castellanos' contract playing out? I got into this just a little bit. I think the Phillies want to move on. I think they would trade him if they could. I think they would eat some of the salary if they could. They're going to keep running him out there. And, I'm not thrilled about that, but I do think that's the plan. I think they're going to keep running him out there. I think this is the player that he is. Can we live with that for another two seasons after this? I don't think so. And that's why I think they would trade him and eat a lot of the salary. But I hope I'm wrong about that, by the way. I want Nick Castellanos to do well. And this next one by Captain Obvious at @OhCaptMyObvious says, let's say Casty keeps falling off a cliff, but that hot third base prospect tears through the minors, talking about Aiden Miller. How do you rearrange the positions of the players? Pay someone to take Casty, move Harper back to the outfield, sign an outfielder, trade Bohm, move Bohm to first? It's a good problem to have. The good news is Aiden Miller is not going to be major league ready until next year at the earliest, and probably not until late next year. He's in low A. He hasn't even been promoted to high A baseball, let alone Reading, let alone Lehigh. Now, we saw with Johan Rojas, you can go from double A straight to the majors. There's a possibility they would do that with Aiden Miller, but I don't think they're going to rush him. So I don't think this is a problem for right now. But if Casty keeps falling off a cliff, I think they're going to have to try and trade him. Do you release him? I don't think they would release him. It would have to get really, really dark for them to release Nick Castellanos. When Aiden Miller is ready to come up to the majors, I think that's going to be about the time that Alec Bohm becomes a free agent. I'm looking at the contract information for Alec Bohm right now. He's off to a great start this year. Let's not kid ourselves. Alec Bohm off to a fantastic start here. He's not an unrestricted free agent until 2027. So the Phillies are going to have a decision to make with Aiden Miller. Maybe they might transition Miller to the outfield at some point. And I think that could be the move. If Aiden Miller continues to make progress as a hitter, I think you start training him in right field. Have him learn the corners. Because I think Bohm's going to be here for a little bit. I've never been the biggest Bohm guy, but I'm seeing a lot from him. He's really hitting the ball well here, and maybe it's all starting to come together for him. You know, he's in his mid-20s now. He's been in the big leagues for a long time. He's starting to see a lot of these pitchers over and over again. It's very encouraging what we're seeing from Alec Bohm. He's the hottest hitter on the team right now, and he's coming through, and he's always been the team's best clutch hitter, with the exception maybe of Bryce Harper, but he's their best hitter with runners in scoring position. It's really a skill he's maintained because he puts the bat on the ball. He doesn't really swing and miss a whole lot, and he's hitting a lot of line drives right now. So I think you start training Aiden Miller once he gets comfortable, once he's in high A or double A, and he's really matured as a hitter, and you feel good about where he is as a hitter, you can start to mix him in the outfield to make him a little bit more versatile. You're not moving Bohm to first. Harper's not going back to the outfield. I think you can cross all those things off the list. Harper's your first baseman. He's going to be your first baseman until he can't play first base physically anymore, and then he's going to be the DH. That's Harper's future. So Bohm is a third baseman, or he's someplace else. That's the bottom line with Alec Bohm. You know, I don't think he's going anywhere until he becomes a free agent. I do think they'll probably let him become a free agent at a certain point, unless he explodes as a player. Like if he has a 900 OPS this year and follows it up next year with another great season, then okay, all bets are off. John DeStefano at JD19 asks, what is the current outlook of the Phillies farm system? Anyone down there that is or will be major league ready this season or next? When will Ranger get paid the big bucks? All right, two different questions here. I think if Ranger Suarez keeps pitching like this, he's going to get a contract extension this year. If not this year, next offseason, like we saw with Aaron Nola. So don't worry about that. Ranger Suarez is going to get paid. It's just a matter of when. I think they kind of would like to see a little bit more than just this great 1 month. But if he makes the All-Star team, keeps pitching like this, he's going to get paid, and nobody needs to worry about that. They'll keep him around. Now, the current outlook of the Phillies farm system, they've got a lot of guys down in the low minors that are really interesting. We talked about Aiden Miller a little bit. We've talked about Justin Crawford. He's an interesting player. Again, still down in, I think he's down in Clearwater right now. Yeah, where is Justin Crawford? He's in Jersey Shore. He's at Jersey Shore now. He's in high A. Maybe he gets moved up at a certain point this year. But they've got some good guys, but they're all in the lower minors. You know, you've got Starlin Cabba, the shortstop who everybody likes. He's playing rookie ball right now. So his ETA for the majors isn't until like 2027. You know, there's guys like catching prospect Eduardo Tate, outfielder Gabriel Rincones. They're all top 10 prospects according to MLB Pipeline. The guys who are closest to the majors are Andrew Painter and Mick Abel when Andrew Painter is healthy. Again, Mick Abel how is Mick Abel? We haven't checked in on Mick Abel in a little bit because he was pitching really well in spring training. So far here in 2024, pitching for Lehigh Valley, Mick Abel is 1-1, not looking great so far in three starts, has an 6.94 ERA. He's given up 9 earned runs in 11 and two thirds innings on 12 hits, 14 strikeouts, but 9 walks. So the walks have been an issue for him. So an encouraging spring training. He hasn't followed that up in Lehigh Valley right now. So there's nothing really there on the farm that's going to help you this year. They're just not. I mean, Rojas got called up. Orion Kerkering is already at the big league level. There's nothing on the farm in AAA and really even in AA that you can point to say like, oh, here come the reinforcements. Maybe Griff McGarry as a right-handed reliever can, if he puts some consistency together in the Lehigh Valley bullpen, you might see him called up. But nobody who could be, he could be an impact guy. He really could be an impact guy if he's throwing strikes. That's the state of the system. It's probably a bottom 10 system, but most people think it is improving. But some of these young guys that they have down in Clearwater and Jersey Shore, there's a lot of work to do, but those guys are exciting. They're kind of interesting. And we'll have a prospect guy on at some point in the next couple of weeks to dive into the Phillies farm system a little bit more in depth. Dylan at ManUTDDYL asks, when is Nick meaning Castellanos actually going to get a day off? Good question. I think it should be soon. Antonio Pulelo at Antonio Pulelo asks, if you had to play every player at a different position, who would play where and who would pitch? All right, let me see if I can do this in my head. I would have Bryce Harper go back to playing right field. Seems the easiest. You know, you could do it like volleyball rotation, just have everybody shift to the left. So Alec Bohm plays shortstop. Bryson Stott goes to first base. Trey Turner plays second base. First baseman Bryce Harper goes and plays catcher, played it in the minors. Realmuto goes and plays third. You have maybe Nick Castellanos can pitch. I think he's too tall and gangly. Who has the best arm? I would probably maybe try and have Johan Rojas pitch. I think he's probably the most athletic of all the Phillies pitchers to go ahead and pitch. So that's how I would rearrange things. Charles Wolf asks a similar question we've been talking about with Nick Castellanos at Charles W. Wolf. Is the Casty Funk a continuation of the 2023 NLCS struggles, or is it its own animal? Your guess is as good as mine. He doesn't seem to know. It's just baseball. Is the answer you get on that one. David J. at Photo DW asks, Topper's idea of the right-handed batting order has lots of deficiencies, as in last night when Sosa and Bohm errors. Okay, that wasn't a question, but that's a good point for sure. The captain asks, at Kyle Coletti 50 asks, possible trade targets from early season bottom of the barrel teams. All right, so here's a problem. These bottom barrel teams, the reason they're bottom barrel, there is not much out there, guy. Like, just think about the Rockies and the White Sox. Was there anybody that came into town that you thought would be somebody you'd want to go out and get? I mean, maybe there's a reliever on one of those teams that's, you know, not a young guy that they would want to keep. But, I mean, they only have three guys. The Rockies, I'm looking at the Rockies, they only have three guys with an OPS plus over 100, and they certainly don't have any pitching to speak of. You look at a team like the Marlins could be somewhat interesting. If you're looking for outfield help late in the season, I don't know, could Jesus Sanchez help you out there? I mean, he's got a 531 OPS. He's cooked. I mean, they have nothing offensively. Like Brian De La Cruz is the only one with some semblance of power in that lineup, but it is a black hole. Even Jazz Chisholm is like 701 OPS. Even he's really struggling. You know, Jake Berger's on the IL, but he wasn't hitting before he went. I mean, they're brutal offensively. Now, they've got some pitchers, you know, Trevor Rogers, Jesus Luzardo. Those are some guys they could conceivably move. You know, Max Meyer is a young pitcher. They're not going to get rid of Max Meyer. But I think you could see them move one of those guys. Maybe there's a relief pitcher. You know, Tanner Scott, if you're interested but he's left-handed. I mean, the Phillies really need kind of like another right-handed reliever in the bullpen to kind of get them through. And they don't have much. I mean, maybe you trade for Sixto Sanchez, maybe? He's got a 6.14 ERA in seven games, but he's a guy who, you know, obviously had Philly ties, but you're not trading for him. You get my point. Like, there's nothing here. There's nothing on the A's. Now, the only team that could be interesting is the Astros. If they continue to fall apart, do they sell some pieces? If so, what pieces would they be selling? That could be interesting. But I think the Astros are going to come back a little bit. I don't think they're going to be like sellers at the trade deadline. I can't imagine that's something that we're going to see. But I might, you know what, Charles, this was by the captain. I might actually do an article on this, captain, at some point. So thank you for the idea. And my general thought is, at the moment, there's not a lot out there on the trade market, but there's a lot of time for some of the teams that are around 500 that maybe decide to throw in the towel if things don't go their way, a team like the Angels or something like that. I don't know, everybody's talking about Mike Trout. Would Mike Trout try to force his way out? I doubt it, but I mean, that's going to be the talk, certainly around the trade deadline, especially here in Philadelphia. Last question. All hail the mysterious gap at Dog Beds and Cheese asks, why the heck are we keeping Merrifield around? My worry about Whit Merrifield was that he would be a glorified Josh Harrison. And that's kind of what he's turned into. That's what he's been so far. Can he turn it around? Sure. He got up an RBI hit in the game here on Wednesday night, but he's been punchless. There's nothing dynamic about his bat. Yeah, he's just, there's not a whole lot there. And everybody was very excited about Whit Merrifield because you know the name, but there's still, again, when I talk about these guys, there's still lots of time left in the season. I get it. Okay. But so far, Whit Merrifield hasn't shown very much. But he's on the team because he's versatile. He can play a lot of different positions. He's kind of like what we were thinking Scott Kingery would one day be. Right now, he's playing like Scott Kingery did when Scott Kingery was in the big league lineup. Scott Kingery, by the way, wailing on AAA pitching. So I really don't believe Scott Kingery plays a single inning for the Phillies here in 2024. And I don't think it's at the expense of Whit Merrifield, but I could be wrong. Stranger things have happened. Whit just needs to produce a little bit more, especially against left-handers. Just hit with a little bit more pop because it's been a struggle for Whit Merrifield so far here in 2024 in this reserve role that he has signed on for here with the Phils. All right, everybody. Thank you for those mailbag questions. That was really good stuff. And we'll open up the mailbag again sometime a little bit further down the road. But good questions from everybody here as we are in our feelings and our thoughts about the Phillies, this Phillies team that just does weird things to us, right? I mean, they make us upset. They make us happy. I know my days are always a little bit brighter when the Phillies win, and they're always a little less bright when they lose. And that's probably a little bit emotionally unhealthy for us. But anyway, that's just kind of how it goes with this team. Winners of 7 in a row, losing the last 2 to the Reds, and of course the rubber match on Thursday. Philly's got to win that Zach Wheeler start. That's really a pitching matchup that's in their advantage. Hopefully you get the regular everyday 9 back on the field for the finale on Thursday. All right, everybody, that's going to do it for this edition of Hittin' Season. Again, thank you all for all the mailbag questions. Want to send you over to billypenn.com/hittin'season. That is our landing page where you can find all of our blog posts that go along with the podcast. And of course, it's where our podcasts are housed as well. So again, that's billypenn.com/hittin'season. I want to encourage you to check out that. And The Good Fight is where you can find my articles on the Phillies as well. Still writing for The Good Fight. So you can check us out and check out all the good writers that are over there as well. Thanks, guys, for tuning in. We will talk to you next time right here on Hittin' Season.